I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Poshnosh Gal, and today I'm with the wonderfully versatile chef James Cochran. Born in the Kent seaside town of Whitstable to Caribbean and Scottish parents, James, or Ja to his friends, learned his craft at the world-famous Ledbury restaurant before being named Champion of Champions on the Great British Menu in 2018. Having temporarily pivoted his new restaurant, 1251, in North London into the socially distanced around the clock, James is the ultimate example of resilience during the industry's challenging times. How are you doing, James?
Yeah, really, really well. That was a great introduction, by the way. Thank you very much. Yeah, you smashed out of the park there, mate. Yeah, doing really, really well.
And how's lockdown been for you?
Pardon?
How's lockdown been for you?
It's been very different. I think one thing that me and my business partner have realised over kind of the last 10 or 12 years, just how much we've just been, how much London's just flown by, how much it's been a bit of a blur. And now we haven't looked after ourselves that much. I think through this lockdown, we've had time to reflect on ourselves, 1251 as a whole, our staff. And I think the most important thing is going back with a structure that you get the best out of all your staff, but make sure they're happy at the same time. So I think the happy is the most important thing in life completely. So it's been very challenging. Like I said, like we found out on a Tuesday that we were closing. We came up with a new concept by Thursday, launched that on like our delivery platforms of Deliveroo, Slurp and Uber Eats. And honestly, like, even though the savage circumstances, it's probably been my most enjoyable time as the restaurant owner, because I've had no staff, no rent, no overheads. And me and my business partner are just turning up, I mean, slinging out some fried chicken. And it's been okay. And I've spent a lot of time at home. Yeah. I mean, I've eaten a lot of fried chicken, so that's been pretty bad. Fried chicken and Negronis has been a bad thing, so I've got a PC now. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you've also started your own podcast as well, and it's called Check on Chef. I've subscribed. How have you found that, and how did you even come up with the idea to do it?
I think we wanted to stay relevant. That was the most important thing. I think through COVID, we found it important to still be in the limelight. A lot of people are going to be on social media or be reading online. Mm-hmm. So we came up with a few ideas and we thought, oh, why not do a podcast? I knew quite a few chefs in the industry. And we kind of listened to a couple of podcasts. So we kind of took a little ideas from here and there, a few little snippets. And yeah, it's been good fun. Something new and different that I've never done before. Like I said, I've not listened to any of my podcasts yet. I don't like the sound of my voice. But it was good fun, and just something interesting. We hope to kind of build on that. So we're looking to get sponsored, hopefully by Bacardi and with their platform. Looking to tag team up with another chef, so us two will do it together, and to see how that grows. But I think at the main time, the most important thing is focusing on our restaurant and trying to get 1251 back up and running.
Yeah, absolutely. And so in the meantime, you've started around-the-clock delivery kits, and you've been getting orders of up to maybe, 200 a week, and partnering with clubs as well. Tell us about that.
So around-the-clock, I kind of came up with this idea about 6 months, 8 months ago. Like, so for me, if you know in publications that a lot of people would always go on about my Jamaican jerk buttermilk fried chicken. You would have seen that famous Astro gave me 4 out of 5. Got some really good reviews from that. And that's really kind of my signature dish at the restaurant. So it was kind of an easy gateway of fried chicken getting into delivery service. And we've done super, super well with that. And now we're looking at franchising it. Because if you know, with the government, it's only 5% VAT on the food.
Yeah.
And we want to try and help unemployment. And also with my name kind of growing and growing, getting bigger, I've got a good connection for people to want to hopefully go into their pubs or restaurants, etc. So the whole thing really was the three things, 18, 24, get them unemployment, government will pay, and really to kind of see where this fried chicken would go, because fried chicken is quite saturated. And at the moment, it'd be a risky thing us looking to open around-the-clock restaurant when it hasn't really kind of walked enough or been had enough reviews on it. So we got that going down at the moment. And then we've done our home restaurant kit. So it's scary when you got a restaurant because you're not too sure like where money's going to be coming through next through COVID. And we're lucky to do really well. And HD Waters, one of my suppliers, who we support each other quite a lot, wanted to do a home restaurant kit.
Right.
And we were like, okay, it's just a great for the brand, great brand awareness. Now we can deliver to everyone at M25. And off the back of that, we thought, okay, so we've had Slurp come to us saying we want to test out doing a national.
Oh,
so now, yeah, so we're looking at launching, signing up with a deal with Hennessy to do like two Hennessy cocktails. And then I don't even remember when I did Goat back a few months ago when I opened up and I did a pop-up in Box Park. Again, support. Because I like, for me, my kind of dream and brand, my dream is really to kind of be the face of Goat as well. So I'm looking at doing something with Cabrito Goat. We're looking at doing like this, like minced goat with jerk spice, like on this flatbread with all the classic flavors that I kind of bring, scotch bonnet jam, yogurt, mint, coriander, crispy shallots, that kind of vibe, the naughty flatbread. And then I've just done one with a company called Restaurant Kits. And then I've done one with Henderson Seafood. So it's like a tandoori spiced sustainable fish called pollock with like mango chutney, onion rata, bombay mix. It's just like a filthy kind of sandwich. And I've really been enjoying it, you know, just when you're setting that mind frame for like working in Michelin star restaurant for the last kind of 10, 12 years, it's kind of nice to mix up a bit and just have a bit of play with food. And
yeah,
like I said, pardon, sorry?
You think outside the box.
Yeah.
To do other things,
and it's just brought another kind of CV to I just added something else onto my CV basically. So yeah, it's been good fun, and we've literally just signed a deal with Electric Pubs to go into two of their pubs to do around the clock. And if it goes well, fingers crossed, nothing happens with COVID, but you never know what could happen. We hopefully to go into all their pubs and look at just trying to help the brand, build the brand more, again, get that unemployment back in, and just see where it goes. I mean, it's not your normal fried chicken. I've done a lot of research into it. So it's got like four processes to it where you brine it, that breaks it down and tenderizes it, adds flavor into it. We put it into buttermilk, that's an acid that, again, tenderizes it. Then we slow fry it at a temperature. Then we high fry it. And again, using beautiful chicken from HD Waters. So
yeah.
It's kind of bring my Michelin star kind of things into the fried chicken game.
Yeah. Well, we've tried to order around the clock, and you mentioned Slurp earlier on. We can't actually get any of your stuff in our area. We're an SE16. So we're looking forward to hopefully getting our hands on it soon. It sounds amazing.
Oh, mate, just DM me your address after and I'll just send one down. I live in South East London, so do you know what I mean? I live Peckham, basically.
Oh, amazing. Okay, cool.
So just let me know and I'll sort you out. Yeah,
fine. I will definitely do that. So what do you think of the Eat Out to Help Out scheme from the government?
I mean, probably this is one thing I'm going to say from the government. Yeah, enough respect to, like, we've noticed as a restaurant that we were slammed last night. So it's helping, it's helping the restaurants and a lot of people going out and supporting us as well. So
yeah.
I'm an avid fan of it. It's a great for us. 100%.
Go out now, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think we're going out probably like 3 or 4 times this week. So yeah, long way. Yeah, it's about time as well.
Where are you going out then? Where are you dining out?
So I went to Six by Nico on Monday.
How was that?
Oh my god, yeah, it's £35 for 6 courses.
Wow, that's really good value.
And then you have matching wine for £33, so £68 with Eat Out, Help Out. You're literally paying, I think, you get looked after well. Then I'm going to Iberica tomorrow,
okay.
And then one of my fan favourites that I've suddenly fallen in love with, Forza Wine in Peckham, if you know it.
No, I don't know it.
It's beautiful. So literally, it's like, it's really romantic. It's kind of put this kind of cargo freight on top of this old like 18th century building. You got the whole perfect sky. You can see the whole skyline of London from east to west, basically. Sun goes down, few glasses of wine, some Italian pasta, happy days, then on to 200 for some cocktails after. and then I'm working quite a lot this week, so I've got quite a few private dinners going on, just to kind of bring some more income into the restaurant, basically.
Right, okay. And so where are you advertising that? Is it on your Insta page?
Yeah, so Bethnal Green Town Hall. It's called APT & Co. They're looking at getting like Claude Bossy, Selin, Jackson Boxer, myself, Lee Westcott. And basically because the hotel's near enough empty and the restaurant's closed, we take on one of their apartments, mm-hmm. like a little table of 8 to 10 people, really intimate, me and one other chef. We can do like matching wines with a tasting menu. And they just have a good night, basically.
That sounds like...
And we just take over all the rest, yeah.
And so earlier on, you mentioned about dreams. And so you knew from quite a young age that you wanted to cook. And I'm assuming your main source of inspiration was your mum. Is that right?
Yes, 100%. So I was kind of born and raised in a little seaside town called Whitstable. And my mum had come over from St. Vincent, really, kind of like, in the early 70s. The first job she got was she was a buyer for Selfridges. But before that, she was her first job, she was a nanny for Princess Mary and Mick Jagger, mentally.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, crazy, eh? Mental, yeah. Cool. And then she came over to here, met my dad, and they really come from very humble beginnings, and they kind of really wanted to give me and my brother the best they could do. So they decided, for some weird reason, send me to a convent. And my dad was really kind of trying to push me into like be a lawyer, barrister, and it was a bit of pressure at the age of 8 years old. I used to cook a lot with my mum, so I knew from then, basically, from the age of 8 years old, I wanted to be a chef. Right. And then my first job, I worked at Wheeler's Oyster Bar and kind of worked at a couple of Michelin star restaurants in back home, and then came to London and I've had nightmares ever since.
Just taking you back a little bit again, did your dad have any influence on your cooking career? I know he wanted you to do something more professional, but any influence?
Yeah, support. But it was kind of putting money into education, so he was kind of wanting a little bit more out of what I wanted to do, basically. But my mum was just like, whatever makes you happy, do what you love. And I knew from age 8 years old. Yeah. And I worked at an institution, well, now it is. It's called Wheeler's Oyster Bar in Whitstable. Okay. It's like a beautiful, like, seafood restaurant, been there since 1856. And it was just a good kind of platform. I started when I was 14 or 13, just doing a bit of washing up. Then over the course of a year, started filleting fish. Then was on the stove cooking, like, 16, 17. And then I went to college, obviously. That was, like... I mean, I wouldn't recommend going to college because it's a bit of a waste of time because it never really kind of teaches you what the real world is. But it was nice to learn kind of your French kind of basics.
Yeah.
And then from there, it just kind of grew.
And did they teach you any cooking at the nunnery?
No, I just got hit a lot, really, because I was quite a naughty kid, basically. It was not a good... Like I said, I don't know why they sent me there. I was playing tag in the playground and literally I ran into a wall and my two front teeth came out and they basically just belted me and told me to get back into class. So my new teeth grew back bad. So yeah, I blame it on the nuns. it was like strange. Like I wish I could ask my parents why. Unfortunately, they both passed away. But I mean, yeah, I wish I could. But I can't ask that question, basically. But yeah, it's weird. Very strange. Because well, like, they're not religious. Well, my mum's kind of religious, my dad's not. So it's very strange.
I guess if you got hit a lot, you probably became really resilient and thick. There's got to be something good that came out of it.
I think they just knew that I was just a naughty kid, basically. So I thought, okay, well, send him to a convent, basically, that's what about. But yeah, it was the making of me.
Where did the name, where did your nickname Jar come from then?
when I was younger, my parents had a house out in Spain, and I used to go out there with my friends. It's like the first holiday you can go on after we finished our GCSEs. And we were at a club, and I think I was only 16 at the time. I just remember I was 16. This guy came up to me. He's like, "Oh my God, it's Dr. Dre." And I was like, "No, I'm not Dr. Dre at all. I'm Ja Rule for some reason." I think I was quite drunk at the time. So everyone was decided to call me Jar from there, and it basically stuck, and it's still stuck to this day.
Oh, well, that's
so. Yeah.
Does he still think? How long did he think you were Ja Rule for?
He made me sign his autograph on his arm. So I know, baffling. Why would Ja Rule be at like a anyway, a weird club in Spain. But anyway, yeah, strange. He didn't ask me to get on the mic, so that was right.
Well, that was probably a saving grace.
Yeah, exactly. Pardon?
I'm sure you wouldn't have done a bad job, though.
I would have given it a go, mate. Always on time is a banger, so yeah.
So going back to your career, so once you gained some experience in kitchens, you landed yourself a job at the famous Ledbury restaurant with Brett Graham. What was it like working with Brett?
So I kind of came to London thinking I was a dog bollocks, basically. I worked at one star back home and I thought, oh yeah, like, I'm the big boy, come to London. I learned very quickly, I got put in my place and learned very quickly that I was not that good of a chef. But I mean, working there was, it was the best years of my life. It was the hardest years of my life. It was the best years of my life. I think it was that mentality that nothing was impossible. Brett would get the best out of you. And if you weren't, he had that kind of skill of like, to push you. And it just, we were in the kitchen at the time when we went from one star rising to two star. And it was just phenomenal. I mean, I left there purely because of, I didn't know myself anymore, because sometimes you're doing like 10 day straight, 14 day straight, and you're starting from 7 in the morning, starting at 7, getting home at 2 o'clock in the morning. So do you know what I mean? When you're working in winter, you wouldn't even see daylight because you're in a basement. And it got to that point, I didn't really know myself my day off. Yeah. And I said to him, like, after I was there for 5 years, so I kind of put my graft in. And I thought it was time for me to move on. But it was just a wonderful place to be. And I was young, I was hungry, and I was just, it was rocking every day. And it was interesting, like, if you knew that you were set by 5:30, you would just go into the fridge and just come up with just a new dish. Like, okay, we're going to make fresh pasta with truffles, just to put you back in the shit again, just to see you push, just to see how much you get out of you. And it was just, yeah, it was good fun. Met some lovely guys there through it all, who've now gone on to bigger, better things, like Isaac McHale from Clove Club. And then I went on to semi-retirement after that. I went to Harwood Arms. I was there for like 4 years as sous chef.
Yeah.
And then I just thought it was time for me to do my own thing. But prior to all of this, I said to myself that I would never open a restaurant in London. And I did. And I think I know the whole thing, the whole James Cochran thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, we are going to cover that. We're going to get to it. But I just wanted to find out your opinion, actually, because working at the Ledbury and then you're moving on to the Harwood Arms, I mean, they're two very different style restaurants. I mean, one's fine dining and the other one's a Michelin-starred pub as well.
Yeah, yeah.
How challenging was it to move from one style to another?
For me, it was really hard. I think where you have that high standard constantly that's embedded into you, it's embedded into you from 7 o'clock in the morning to 1 o'clock in the morning. And then you go to a pub where it's just a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can cut the corners a little bit. It was pretty bad because I was kind of, when you work at Ledbury, you're kind of trained to be like at that high standard. And I went there and I mean, a lot of staff did leave purely because I just had that kind of that wrong attitude to be in the kitchen. just shouting them once, shouting them quite a bit, and just not being that kind of as a role model in some kind of ways. So it was really kind of hard for me to kind of adapt. And then I was getting nosebleeds so often because of the amount of stress that I was having, that I was putting on myself. And just one of my friends who kind of came for labor there was like, look at your kitchen. You're not happy. They're not happy. And you think, don't you think, James, that people should come into work every day, to want to come to work for you? And from that day, I literally just changed my mentality completely and was just like, at the end of the day, it's not about me, it's about the team. Mm-hmm. So if you can get the best out of team and takes a little bit of pressure off yourself, then it's a happy environment to be in. So I think it was great for me to make a transition working from there to go to that, because like I said, like the most important thing for anybody in any job is happiness. Mm-hmm. And if you're not doing that, then you need to kind of figure out a solution or a way that you can get to that point, because I've had very hard moments where I've left the library crying and just put so much stress on myself. There's no need to. And I think a lot of chefs out there think it's all about me. But for me, it's if I brought a chef in that's come from Westminster College, or I've got a 2-star chef, everyone in my kitchen is treated completely equal. And it's about how we can work as a team to get the best out of them and for them to feel that integral of the restaurant, that their dishes we're putting on the menu, they've had some input into it.
This is actually really, really good for you to share. I mean, it's good for people to hear it, because kitchens are such notoriously high stress environments, and I think a lot of people find it really difficult. And it's okay to say, I left the kitchen crying, and I get nosebleeds from the stress.
But,
you know, the point is that you actually, you know, you keep going, you find another way to work through it. So that's pretty cool. Thanks for sharing.
The thing that I've realized, and I've had a couple of interviews with just on the whole Black Lives Matter thing, and then speaking like, oh, you're kind of like one of the hottest in like black chefs at the moment. And they've asked me some questions that I've just felt really kind of, in my eyes, I have no real arrogance. And I think like a lot of chefs have something to prove, and I don't really understand why. I don't get it. I just think like, I'll be honest with you, like I make mistakes every day. Most of my chefs in my kitchen are better than me. I have nothing to prove in a day. And I think in some ways that a lot of chefs should kind of realize that and go back in with a kind of a more positive structure, because without the kitchen porter, nothing's possible. They're the most important people in the kitchen, in my eyes. And I think people need to be more equal and be more caring towards each other. It's just a thing that really kind of winds me up with some chefs, that it's all about me. And I just think, what do you have to prove at the end of the day? Because I'm no better than you. I'm no better than my missus. I'm no better than anyone at cooking. You make yourself got good knowledge or understanding of flavours. That's it, really.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you'd be a really good mentor.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, well, I try. I do my best.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm most perfect, but you always strive to be better, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So what was the decision, the moment that you actually decided to leave Harwood Arms and start up on your own then? That was 2013, I think, right?
Yeah, it was many. Lots happened in that time. it was kind of my housemates. It was kind of one of the first kind of pop-ups were about. And my housemates, I used to live in Camberwell Green. And they were like, let's come up with a new kind of idea. Let's bring out a thing called Campbell Love. So we decided to do pop-ups. Loved it. It was like, again, a great time. You're literally doing pop-ups. You're making really good money. You take over a pub on a Monday, Tuesday. They take the money in the wine. There's no rent. This is not when it was like how it should be, really. Right. And it was like 5 of us. We were making like 4.5 grand in a couple of days, avoiding the tax man, all of that. It was just good fun, mate. And from there, it was interesting because I was like, okay, maybe I've got something here that I could possibly do on my own. And my friend used to come to the restaurant quite a bit. And we both did our first place together over in Morning Lane called Fix the Fine Dining. Super, super naive. thinking, oh yeah, I work delivery, that all people are going to come. First off, if you don't spend money on PR, it's going to be a tough one to try and get yourself going, basically. We were just super naive, negotiating the rent, everything, running a restaurant. We don't think it even lasted a year. And it got to a point where I couldn't afford rent, so I had to live in a basement at work. So then I lived in a basement work for like a month, and I had to borrow our mates' like membership to use like the shower. So it was a really kind of dark moment. But like I said, like I look back at all this kind of journey, and I think you can look at it in so many ways. Yes, I failed in the business, but all these things I think just makes you stronger as a person, and you hopefully will not make those kind of mistakes that you've done in the past. And I mean, I'm not saying, I'll be honest with you now, my restaurant's not successful, but I feel like we're on a platform to getting it there. I don't know what is success. I don't really have the answer to that, to be honest with you. But all them kind of things all been learning curves. I've had it pretty harsh.
You didn't give up on that though. I mean, you got up, you dusted yourself off, and the next thing we know, we got James Cochran EC3. Reviews.
Yeah.
So tell us how did that actually come about? Tell us how you started that.
So literally we closed around the clock. We closed Fix. Jesus Christ. Don't get too ahead of yourself. We closed Fix and I was getting phone calls. It was all my suppliers wanting money that we didn't have. This is no lie, my phone actually went off in my pocket. Picked up the phone and was like, Jesus Christ, you're hard to get in touch with. I was like, who's this? He was like, oh, I've come to your restaurant. I've seen you close. I'm looking at a place open up in Soho, BYC for James Cochran. Would you like to be involved in it? I was like, of course I fucking, this is amazing. Yeah, like literally, like I'm living in a basement at work. I've had to move back to my brother's. So I was like, yeah, this is amazing. So first of all, one thing I'd say is they kind of put me on a platform for me to be able to do Great British Menu. So I say thanks for that. So we did BYC featuring James Cochran in Soho. Mm-hmm. That was kind of just like a pop-up type vibe. Had good reviews from that. And the place was doing well. So he went into a permanent place over in Bevis Marks in the city. And it was just, the reviews literally went mental.
Yeah,
really, really good reviews. We were slamming busy every day. It was just me and one other chef in the kitchen doing 130 covers a day. It was mental. It was ridiculous. And then it kind of went a little bit sour, basically. So I had done Great British Menu back in, I won it in 2018, but I think I filmed it in 2017. I think so. Yeah, 2017. It was December time. Mm-hmm. And I've always been telling my directors that there was nowhere else for me to go at James Cochran EC3. So my business partner now, we were looking to open up 1251. This was in 2018. So I've kind of been pretty honest with my directors with what was going down. And I had a couple of meetings with a couple of investors. And then I just got a phone call. It was like after the Easter weekend. And one of my chefs rang me up and was like, mate, I've just been sacked. And Nita wanted to come work for me at my new place. Got another phone call saying, I've just been sacked. I was like, hang on here, I'm going to get a phone call in a minute. By the way, James, don't bother coming back. Uh-oh. So I was like, fuck, the first thing I need to do is go into company houses. Basically trademark my name. What they'd done back in December is they trademarked my name, but you can contest it, but I didn't know about it because after I'd done one of the Great British Menu on my regional heats, they decided to basically trademark my name. So I had no clue about it.
That though, without your permission?
I think you can literally, if there's something to be trademarked, you can trademark if no one knows about it. So basically they trademarked my name. You can contest it in 2 months, but again, I didn't know. So again.
Unbelievable.
Again, going, it's like I said, learning curve. So next thing you know, you've got bloody every paper, radio, every type of media on your case saying, what are you going to do, James? You're going to have to change your name. Imagine someone telling you you've got to change your name. Yeah, it's a bit bizarre. So then, no, I don't think a lot of people know this, how it kind of ended up closing. But I had my landlord around my house, and my missus was basically telling the landlord, what's this? Typed in, like, literally James Cochrane, and it just came up with a website that you can now buy, like, my four dishes for your pub or for your bar. James Cochrane exclusive Scotch egg, Jamaican Joe Bunny Mutt Chicken. So basically, my missus put it on Twitter, and it ended up going viral. And then he had, like, I think Jamie would post something or something, and then Zach Baines, and then everyone started changing their, accounts to, like, the real James Cochrane or the fake James Cochrane, I can't remember. And through that, again, social media can be a powerhouse. There's two ways to look at it.
Yeah.
It ended up closing down from that. So I was just stuck with my name. But they said, if you want to buy your name back, it's going to cost you 250 grand. I was like,
what? Oh my God. I can't believe that. It's shocking. But if they've closed down, does that not mean you can?
They own the name for the next 10 years. But let's be honest, mate. If they decide to come to a restaurant, I literally just pipes up a little bit about it on social or anything. People are going to protect and. But again, like I said, it was a good platform for me to raise my profile again. So I do thank them for that behalf. But no, I don't have 250 grand in my bank to give you, so that's not going to happen. And then from there, we open up 1251, basically.
Well, hang on a second, please. I wanted to talk about your champion of champions at the Great British Menu 2018. That must have, you know, I know there was a lot of awful stuff going on around that time. Must have been really, really stressful. But that must have cleared you up a lot.
Yeah, 100%. I think it kind of took like a month or two really to kind of get over it all. But knew by this time that I'd already filmed Great British Menu, so I knew that it was going to happen. So really, the only goal was literally find a restaurant ASAP. My business partner, who I met when I was doing pop-ups, that we kind of spoke 2 or 3 years ago about kind of opening a restaurant together, wanted to learn our craft a bit more.
Yeah.
I've just gone on to 12-1. Back to Champions of Champions. Yes, it was amazing. It was a great platform for me to, like, literally. So think about it, like, no one really knew about me that much. Kind of after watching that, again, it just rose the profile. And it was a great show to do. Yeah. I think if you look at all the big chefs that kind of on there. So, it was very stressful times. I didn't enjoy it, but it was the first time I'd ever really been on TV. Mm-hmm. And I found it very hard because it's very kind of structured, isn't it, the show? You know what I mean? It's been going for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Kind of hard to be yourself, but because you're filming from like 7 o'clock in the morning, right, 8 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night just for a half-hour show. So it's quite long.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I thank you very much. And again, it's another platform to hopefully build my profile more and more.
Yeah, definitely. And so what would your advice be to other people thinking about going on the show?
Enjoy it. Really try to enjoy it. Even though it's stressful, at the end of the day, every single person there kicks their heart out. But in a day, if you win it or you don't, you should be happy that you've kind of been recognised to actually go onto the show.
Yeah.
And one thing I say, like, if even though I would never ever do it again, because I did Champions and won it, it's a great platform. And just enjoy yourself. Like, that's the most thing. Enjoy yourself. Yeah. Make mistakes. Don't really matter. I mean, I went in there basically, and I went on the show and I'd never done any of my dishes.
Okay.
So I'd never rehearsed any of my dishes at my restaurant. I just went in there blind, literally just blind. And there were some things. I'm sitting there talking to Tom Akins. I'm just making up stuff as I go along. I don't even know what I'm doing, mate. So he's like, the Windrush dish. I was like, so I'm going to put some wind sails in there of like seaweed. It was just And then the funny thing about it, because I'm tasting these dishes for the first time, so everything that he said is completely correct. So when I said I'll give myself a 6, was completely correct to say, because I'm saying we need to do this or this or this. So on the Friday, I just went in super relaxed. So now I've tasted all my dishes.
Yeah.
So now I know what I need to do, what is right, what is wrong. And then I just was super chilled and calmed and enjoyed it.
Brilliant.
And luckily I won. Yeah.
So you talked about your business partner earlier on, who you were teaming up with for 1251. It's a really interesting name for a restaurant. Where did it come from? Did you think of it, or did your partner think of it?
So when I was saying to you before, like when we both kind of met each other like 2-3 years ago,
yeah,
he had a pub on Upper Street called the Steam Passage that he was running. And he was like, do you fancy doing New Year's Eve at my pub? I was like, yeah, wicked, came on. And his, do you know what I mean? Like the stuff he was doing was like a la Bing type food. So it was kind of like, he was like, wow, this food's amazing. And we were both pretty drunk at the time. And we were like, I need to learn my trade a little bit more. I need to be understanding, business savvy. He's like, I need to do a couple more years doing this. And we're like, should we go into business? And we're like, yeah. And as soon as we said that, the 1251 Strokes song came on. So like, oh, should we just call it 1251? We're like, yeah, okay. So we stuck with that, and we're like, okay, now we need to kind of think of the meaning behind 1251 and people ask about us. So we've got the story of what it's called, but what's it mean?
Yeah, 9 minutes.
So 12 is the existence of our restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
If we turn 12 backwards and upside down, is 51. Yeah, you with me?
Yeah.
So basically, 51 means that we do little separate entities off of my identity. So the Scotch Bonnet Jam, the beer, go, kind of round the clock. And that's what it kind of means.
Oh, that's really clever, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, as long as I have a connection to my roots in some kind of way, then that's what it means. So, yeah, that's it. And it's been a good 2 years. It's just been a good 2 years, really. Like,
you mentioned the Scotch bonnet. Is that a little bit of Scottish influence in there?
Sorry, say that again.
You mentioned the Scotch bonnet.
Yeah, so that's my
Scottish influence.
So, I said, both my parents. What I would tell you this is that there's a lot of restaurants out there that a lot of people don't have much identity to.
Mm-hmm.
Great restaurants to eat at, but I think for me, people are so interested these days. They love to have a story behind food, if it's sourced or something you can tell.
Yeah.
So for me, I tried to bring my Scottish, my West Indian, and my Whitstable roots into what I do and tell a story and people understand it. And the Scotch Bonnet Jam, that is like one of my proudest things. And you're going to be seeing a lot more Scotch Bonnet Jam soon, basically.
Awesome.
That's all I'm going to say. Yeah, we're looking at, I say no more. It's exciting times, basically.
And
that's something that I'm proud of, because it represents part of my roots, basically.
Yeah, of course. And so, I mean, when are we going to see 1251 opening again?
Fingers crossed, I hope the end of September.
Okay.
Fingers crossed.
Okay.
I can't put a confirmed date, but at this present moment, we're doing a couple one-off nights on the 10th, 18th, and 25th of August.
Okay.
I think we've still got dates for the 25th of August, but we sold out so quickly. I'm going to be doing a no menu. So it's basically, I'm going to be doing some new dishes or some new ideas that I'm going to be bringing to the table when we reopen. Mm-hmm. So it's quite exciting, because the customer doesn't know what they're eating.
Yeah, I love it.
I'll be going upstairs, explaining it to them, getting some feedback. And it's the food that I love. Do you know what I mean? It's like, this, like I said, I don't get much satisfaction slinging that chicken. It doesn't motivate it that much. And it's the food that I've been doing for the last kind of 10, 15 years.
Mm.
So, I'm super excited about that.
And talk to me about the food style at 1251.
Yeah, 1251.
there's no flow to it. Basically, it's a really don't give a fuck attitude. Like, I no dish will have flow to it, basically. I'm bringing in, I think what's important is I don't like restaurants that just put, what winds up at Instagram now is people just plate food to make it look pretty with no substance. Mm-hmm. I think it's integral for me to be able to bring stuff full of flavor. So everything on my plate represents something of me that's full of flavor bombs. And yeah, I just like to bring my roots to the table, basically. My style of food is non-pretentious in the slightest. I won't go too much into that, but yeah.
Okay.
Basically, it's good music, good service, and banging food. And hopefully we can tick all the three of those boxes. But you can't please everyone. You know what I mean? We may have 100 people come on Saturday and 8 people don't like it. That's fine. I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You can't please everyone.
Yeah. Well, I cannot wait. So I'm looking forward to opening up. But so we talked about this briefly earlier around the clock. So during lockdown, you've rebranded. Will we continue to see around the clock once you open again?
Yeah, 100%. Like I said, we've just signed up with a company called Electric Bars or Electric Pubs. They've got 7 pubs based over London. So we're looking at getting 2 into there at the end of September. And looking really just to kind of help and support businesses, try and decrease the unemployment. And I mean, for me, like, fried chicken is my favourite thing to eat. I don't know, it's just comforting. Yeah, like the whole real story behind the fried chicken was my mum found it integral for me to understand my West Indian culture. So before I went to St. Vincent, my mum used to take me to Brixton to understand the West Indian culture there. I remember my mum bought me some fried chicken and I'll never forget the taste of it from the age of like 7 years old. And that stuck with me. And that's the reason that's my signature dish, because every single person that comes to the restaurant will always have that dish. And for me, it's the most comforting dish, it's the most Moorish and enjoyable dish I like to eat out of all my stuff I put on the menu.
And
so long may around the clock continue. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a big Asian influence in your new menu. You've got a bit of Indian, Korean, Chinese. Where did those influences come from?
This is something that I had an idea about around the clock. And then we had to close and open up on a Thursday. So I'm just literally, it's like, I'm just playing with so many flavors.
Amazing.
Yeah. I'm just playing with flavors. Next week it could be whatever, basically. But I think Asia's the food that I love the most because I find like it's really full of flavor. And I bring little snippets of that onto my menu at 12:51. And if it's brining, lamb in fish sauce and soy. So I think if you've got bold flavors that punch a kick, then you're kind of winning. And fried chicken. So yeah. Mm-hmm. It could still develop. It could change. My menu could change next week, but I don't think my chefs will be happy with that. That's one thing I need to learn is don't change the menu too often.
Okay.
Yeah, for a business model, it doesn't make any sense because it's hard to track your GP.
Yeah.
But for me and my chefs, it's great. For front of house, it's a nightmare because they just can't keep up with me. Yeah. So what I'm learning now is basically don't change the menu after every 2 months. And okay. That's it.
Well, yeah. I actually really, really like the idea of you constantly evolving and your customers evolving with you. I think I love that concept.
Yeah, should tell my business partner that. He's basically told me just to put the reins on it a little bit.
I'm not a restaurant.
I think the one thing to understand as well is consistency.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes one thing we may have lacked a little bit there. The standard may have dropped. Sometimes I wasn't there. And I think it's because just the amount of, like I said, like learning through, being able to reflect. Like in some ways, we can relaunch 1251 now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to change a few things that I can't tell you right now, but we're going to make it kind of more structured and less stressful for everybody. But I do agree with you. I do like to change it, but maybe I might just drop a dish here and there.
Yeah, keep us
if I'm allowed. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, probably nothing will change. I'll just go back and I'll be just changing the menu every day, basically. So I say one thing, but it could be another.
Okay, well, it's cool. I like surprises. So despite you coming from Whitstable, I know you're a great fish lover, but there's not actually a lot of fish on your menu.
There's not really. And I don't have an answer why, basically. So the kind of the layout of the menu we had was like three garden, three land, three sea. And then our snacks. But I don't have answers to that one. I can't like that. I mean, you're probably right. I should put more fish on, basically, because I do love fish, to be fair. But I think because of how it was modelled, yeah, it was just three fish, three main, and three vegetable dishes. And that was it. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on. So I've got a perfect thing, actually, because you're based in Islington. You must be an Arsenal fan, right?
No, Tottenham.
Oh, you're a Tottenham fan. Oh,
yes.
My husband was like, slam dunk. He's going to be an Arsenal fan because he's from Islington. And
No.
Happy about the cup final then?
Nothing really to talk about on that, really, is there? Two London teams I don't really dislike. But on the flip side, it's actually quite fun because on the Sunday, more because you do a roast, you get a lot of fans come in and it's quite good banter, basically, to have with the fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one North London team anyway, mate. So, yeah, even though they've won more cups than us, but we won't go into this conversation, basically. But to be fair, Spurs are crap at the moment. But the best thing to come out of Spurs, as you've probably known, I've taken over Spurs twice last season. So that was good fun.
Oh, cool.
Really good fun. It's like by one of the highlights of my life is cooking. I managed to basically look after, I had like 100 chefs working with me. I think we had like 2,000 members on site. And I basically did my menu between five different restaurants. Yeah. I want to get around the clock in there as well. That's my kind of dream. Yeah. So, pardon?
That's awesome.
Yeah, honestly, like, and I feel like family. Honestly, I can't express it. I've never felt so welcome in my life. Plus, being a Spurs supporter, yeah, it was beautiful. And literally, I just look after a table of 12 in, like, the members area.
Yeah.
And I've got, like, another 99 staff, basically, just looking after thousands of people. So, yeah, it's good fun.
That is pretty cool. How did the opportunity come about?
DM me on Instagram.
No way!
Yeah. Just saying, do you fancy coming to do a day at Spurs? I was like, you do know I'm a Spurs fan, by the way. And hopefully, like, sounds quite lulls, but I'm hopefully trying to, once things back up running, I want to sign a contract with them to be doing, like, four games a year.
Wow.
Because, like, you have, like, it's just crazy to think. From 3 years ago, my name was stolen. Now, basically, my dream club, I'm doing the food there. So, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, well, I think I read somewhere just recently that, you know, all the experiences that you go through, you know, they're not bad experiences if they've made you who you are today.
100%, yeah. And it makes you stronger.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, and your journey's really tested you and your resilience. And you've got a great short story that shows, you know, no matter how tough things can get, you can rise above it and, you know, you learn your lessons and you start over. What kind of message or advice would you give to any aspiring young chef today?
One thing I would say, that nothing's impossible. If you have a dream or a vision, that you can do it if you put hard work and dedication into it. One thing you need to understand is if you're going to get an investor for someone to understand your philosophy and your dream and your vision, and don't accept for anything else. Also, it's important as well to have an identity. You can open a restaurant tomorrow and it could be a carbon copy of what you've done before, but bring something that represents you or from your heritage or your roots or something that you're going to support or something you're proud of that makes you stand out from the rest.
Great. Sounds like wonderful advice. So, James, you've been amazing. It's been awesome chatting.
No worries.
I've got one last question, though. Tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know.
So when I was younger, I was on this island called Young Island, just off of St. Vincent. And I was playing ball on the beach, and this woman came up to me to give me the ball, but your mum always says, never talk to strangers, don't you?
Yeah.
So I ran off crying back to my parents. I need to find out it's Whitney Houston.
Oh my God, you ran away from Whitney Houston.
Yeah, crying. Yeah, crazy, hey? Yeah, and of course I was so young. I was only like three or four. I didn't even know who she was until as I got like to 7, 8, when I'm like, oh my God, that's Whitney Houston. Crazy. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's always my go-to, that is.
Well, thank you for sharing. That was a brilliant story. And pleasure chatting with you. And guys, if you want to catch up with James, he's at Chef James Cochran. And I'm at Posh Nosh Gal. Thanks, James.
No worries. Thank you very much. Cheers.